Thank you, and hello everyone. How are you? I was going to tease you, George, but now I can't because you waved at me. I was going to say, shh, I think George is about to fall asleep. But then you showed a little life, so I can't do that. So those of you who are paying attention to the I Am That half hour, I'm now moving around between three books rather than just sticking with I Am That. Whatever I feel like doing, I'm being free. Of course, all the books are Nisargadatta Maharaj. And tonight I have decided to go ahead and try this book. It's called Consciousness and the Absolute, The Final Talks of Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And a couple of different people have told me that Nisargadatta himself asked people to quit reading I Am That. And they have recommended his final talks. So I haven't read these final talks yet. They're completely new to me. This is a brand new book. So we'll find out what all the fuss is about that even Nisargadatta himself said, quit reading I Am That. At least that's what a couple of different people have told me. I don't know if it's true or not. I never heard him say it, but it could be true. So I am going to open up to the first conversation. Now, this particular book has the same format as I Am That, in that it's question and answer. But maybe if Nisargadatta really did like these conversations better, maybe they're better questioners. We'll find out. This first talk is dated May 1, 1980. Just out of curiosity, I want to see what the date is on the last talk. July 30, 1981. Does anybody remember when he died? I know it was in the 80s, but I don't remember when. June 30, 1981 is the last talk. So here is the first talk. These talks don't have titles, they just have dates. So again, this is May 1, 1980. And the questioner says, how does a Yanani see the world? Okay, Nisargadatta's answer is two paragraphs long, and I haven't read a single word of it, but my eyes just skipped down to the next question, and I found it quite funny. The next question is, but I like to act, I like to work. That kind of struck my funny bone. But let's look at how Nisargadatta answers. How does a Yanani see the world? A Yanani is aware of the origin and the value of consciousness, this beingness, which has spontaneously dawned on him. This same consciousness plays a multitude of roles. Some happy, some unhappy. But whatever the roles, the Yanani is merely the seer of them. The roles have no effect on the Yanani. All your problems are body-mind problems. Even so, you cling to that body. Since you identify with the body mind, you follow certain polite modes of expression when you talk. I do not, says Nisargadatta. And we've heard that about him too, right? That he would yell at people. Since you identify with the body mind, you follow certain polite modes of expression when you talk. I do not. I might embarrass you. You may not be able to take what I say. I have no sense of propriety. You are bound by your own concepts and notions. Actually, you love only this sense of I. You do everything because of this. You are not working for anybody, nor for the nation, but only for this sense of I, which you love so much. And of course, we don't know anything about who he's talking to, but based on this answer, I would suspect that it was like a government employee, right? Because he says, you're not working for anybody nor for the nation, but only for this sense of I, which you love so much. So what I hear Nizar Gadot is saying here, in short, is that as long as we are still attached to the I thought, we are inherently selfish. And any of you all that have listened very closely to my teachings have heard me say that before too. We can't help it. Even when we think we're being selfless, if it's coming from the ego, it's selfish. For example, a thought that I saw in my mind today, which I fortunately giggled at, but I'm doing what we call flood mitigation work here in La Vida, which is clearing out the river channel so that hopefully it doesn't flood. And people are beginning to know me now in this. It's a little town, but people are beginning to know me now. Like one person's like, oh, you're the one that gave that presentation last month. And, you're the one that Shauna knows. And people are getting to know Shauna too. And, there's this thought about, I like people getting to know who I am. Right. And when you're doing the flood mitigation work, you get to know a lot of people and they get to know who you are. Now I chose to giggle at that thought. I chose to let that thought go because I knew that isn't a purpose I want to adopt. I don't want to adopt a purpose of, yay, people know who I am. They're going to know who I am. You can't avoid it in this town, but I don't want to have that point of view here. Right. But if I hadn't watched that thought carefully, you see how that would seep in even to what seems to be a selfless act doing the mitigation work. Oh, now people are getting to know me, right? And of course, most people that are attached to the I thought, I'll tell you in a moment why I did this. Most people who are attached to the I thought, they don't catch those thoughts when they show up. They just think, oh, people are getting to know me. I'm getting to be known here. And they go on with it. And then they say, they might even go sign up for more mitigation days. Hey, more, people are getting to know me better if I show up more, right? And they think they're being selfless when they're being selfish, right? And that's what Nizar Gadot is saying here. He's saying, you do everything because of this. You love, listen to this word, you love only this sense of I. Yeah, only. That's a hell of a word. Oh, heck of a word. It is. But he's right. I remember, and this was many years ago, but I thought I loved my daughter. In fact, for those of you who don't know me, I adopted my daughter from China. I dreamed about having a Chinese baby for years before I finally had one in my arms. This was a dream come true. This was the best thing that ever happened to me. I loved my daughter so much. But when I started on the spiritual path and I started really watching my thoughts, I started noticing that wasn't true. That what my daughter really was to me was like a little, I wanted a little trophy. She was like my little trophy and my little plaything. And unfortunately, this is true of lots of parents, whether they have seen that yet or not. But, I had her in Chinese school. I had her in piano. I had her in gymnastics. I had her in horseback riding. We did all this homework, reading and math, because I wanted her to be the best. Why did I want her to be the best? Not because I loved her. I wanted my trophy. And it's crude and rude, but true. And it's true of a whole lot of parents out there, right? I wanted my trophy. How selfish is that? Think about it. You love only this sense of I. I mean, let's look at our romantic relationships for a moment, shall we? I remember when I was pretty young, maybe 19, and is still wanting to find Mr. Right. I read this book, kind of an old-fashioned book. Most people that, I can't even think of the word. What is it when you are trying to elevate women to be, quote, because you think they're not equal to men, so you're trying to elevate them to be equal to men, right? Not that women ever had to be elevated. Even that's an imagination. You know, roles change, but some people thought they had to be elevated because they thought they weren't equal, right? So this book was written before that time, so it was a little more old-fashioned. And it was telling a woman how to catch a man. Because, you know, everybody had to get married. That's what women did back then when this book was written. And one of the things it said about how to catch a man was, it said, you know, men imagine that they want like an attractive woman and you know, and it's okay to dress nice and all that and look good. And they said, but that's not really what men want. George, you can tell us if this is true or not. They said, really what men want is a woman that in the way she is with him, she makes him feel good about himself.
Right on.
He feels, is that true, George?
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably, I think it's probably true of us too. We probably want a man that makes us feel good about ourselves, right? Okay. Stop. How selfish is that? Think about it, guys. Think about that. I want a partner that makes me feel good about myself. And what happens the moment you quit making me feel good about myself? Suddenly, I don't love you anymore, as if I ever did. Right? As if I ever did. I didn't love you. I loved the me that I was when I was with you until you started, you know, being the way that you really are. And then that kind of all falls apart. I mean, just listen to the sentence. You love only this sense of I. Can you hear me, Jacqueline? I see you doing this. You can't. Can anybody else hear me? Okay, so it's just your problem, Jacqueline. Yeah.
Your volume dropped considerably in the middle of that last couple sentences. I don't know what happened.
Okay, well, I don't either, but hopefully it's okay now. So you love only this sense of I. You do everything because of this. And in fact, he's even telling this person, the reason you're polite, right? The reason you're nice to people is you know, he doesn't finish it, but so people will like you and think well of you, right? You don't want people thinking bad of you. You know, you love only this sense of I. You do everything because of this. It's just worth, you know, I mean, there's nothing else I can say about it except just keep repeating it, but it's kind of worth hanging out with it a little bit, letting it sink in a little bit. Because, you know, if we're on this spiritual path, what we at least intellectually say is that we're here to let go of that I. Well, you can't love only that sense of I and let go of it too. You guys agree with that? So maybe if we're serious about wanting to let go of this I, one of the things we need to start doing is noticing without judgment our own selfishness so that we can drop it, right? You guys know you can't let go of anything that you don't see, right? You have to see it to let go of it. So maybe what we want to do is start just kind of tune in a little bit and start paying attention to when we are being selfish, you know? Now, where is that selfishness, that loving only that sense of I? How is that showing up for me? How am I still playing that game? And then start, you know, kind of letting go of that. Because otherwise it's going to be really tough to let go of that sense of I if it really is our only true lover. Right? Now, again, he ended this answer by saying, you are not working for anybody, nor for the nation, but only for this sense of I, which you love so much. And the questioner says, I'm not quite sure why the questioner says this, but I like to act. I like to work. You know, maybe he thinks Nisargadatta is telling him you shouldn't work, which Nisargadatta isn't saying. Nisargadatta is really saying you should look at how much you love that eye, right? The questioner says, but I like to act. I like to work. Nisargadatta says, all these activities go on, but they are only entertainment. The waking and deep sleep states come and go spontaneously. Through the sense of I, you spontaneously feel like working. But find out if this sense of I is real or unreal, permanent or impermanent. I just remembered I told you guys that I would tell you why I did this earlier when I said I. One of the things that I think it was the Guiding Light this week. Not the Guiding Light. I think it was in Gentle Healing this week where we contemplated this, but I'm not sure. I do too many teachings. I get them all mixed up. Somewhere in the last week, I talked about the fact that the I thought is all of the thoughts, not just I. You know, it's funny. I have known people in my life that have literally learned to speak without using the word I. You know, like if I was the one doing that, I might say, Regina's drinking Diet Dr. Pepper today. She doesn't usually do that, but after she worked mitigation, she, you know, she felt like she wanted something a little special to relax with, so she got a Diet Dr. Pepper. But see how I avoid the word I? I've known people that do that, which I think is kind of funny, kind of silly, kind of unnecessary, actually. But the reason they do it is all this talk about the I thought. Well, the I thought isn't the word I. The I thought is the identification with Regina, whether I call her Regina or whether I call her I, is irrelevant. It's the identification with the person as who I am and all of the thoughts that come from that. You know, all of the thoughts that come from that. Well, how many of the thoughts in your head do you think come from your identification with the person? Pretty much all of them. In fact, even the spiritual thoughts, believe it or not, that you're contemplating in order to undo the person, they're corrective thoughts, but you wouldn't need a correction if you didn't believe the error, which means even the corrective thoughts are there because of your identification with the person. So the I thought isn't the word I, it's the whole kick and caboodle, the whole, all of the thoughts is the I thought. All of the thoughts is the I thought. So again, Nisargadatta says, through the sense of I, you spontaneously feel like working, but find out if this sense of I is real or unreal, permanent or impermanent. The I which appears is unreal. And when he says the I which appears is unreal, we really want to remember we're talking about that whole bundle of thoughts, not just that one word, right? The I which appears is unreal. How unreal it is, I have proven. The moment the I is proven unreal, who is it who knows that the I is unreal? This knowledge within you that knows the I is unreal, that knowledge which knows change must itself be changeless and permanent. Now, what Nisargadatta is saying here isn't anything that every one of us have, we've all heard it. We've all heard it. But what blows me away when I'm in meditation is no matter how much more subtle I get, right? Like, you know, if you think of thoughts as hard, because they are, and you drop back, you know, maybe you drop back to sensations, and then you drop back to being aware of the sensations, right? And you keep dropping back. No matter how subtle I get, I'm aware of that subtlety. I mean, that's just amazing. There isn't anything at all that I can point to, no matter how subtle, that is what I am. You know, sometimes people will go into meditation and they'll hit this just spacious, silent point, you know, and they think that that's it, the spacious, silent point. That's not it. It is what sees the spacious, silent point. And it's amazing. At least it is to me. I don't know. Maybe it shouldn't be that amazing, but it is amazing. And this is what Nisargadatta is pointing him to, right? The I which appears is unreal. Anything that appears is unreal. You know, like I've had one friend one time ask me, she started meditating and started feeling like this fluttering in her heart, which is really nice. Y'all have felt it, right? It feels good. But she said, is that it? Like, no. No, what sees the fluttering in the heart, right? The fluttering in the heart appears. It's not always there, right? When you sit down to meditation, maybe it appears. But when you're working away, you know, at your taxes, you usually don't feel it. Right? It comes and goes. That can't be you. You don't come and go. You're what's there, whether there's a fluttering in your heart or not, right? A fluttering in your heart or, you know, pure hatred in your heart. You're what's there all the time. So the I which appears is the key word in that sentence, is unreal, even if it's the spaciousness that you're aware of. What sees the spaciousness, right? If only that which is seeing everything is real. Only you are real. I mean, isn't that amazing? Only you are real. Everything that you experience is unreal. The I which appears is unreal. How unreal it is, I have proven. The moment the I is proven unreal, who is it who knows that the I is unreal? This knowledge within you that knows the I is unreal, that knowledge which knows change must itself be changeless and permanent. You know, I had one friend one day, I don't remember, we were talking about awareness, watching awareness, and we're taking a walk, and she says to me, well, I used to be able to get it, but lately I've just lost awareness and I can't get it. I'm like, what? She goes, I lost awareness, I can't get it. I'm like, well, then how are you talking to me? You know what I mean? How can you talk to me? See, we think awareness is something, like maybe she felt the flutter in her heart or the spaciousness or something. You can't lose it. You can not pay attention to it. But you can't lose it. How can you lose yourself? I remember once at a retreat, I made a bunch of people get up and run in circles. I said, come on, try and run away from it. Come on, run, run, run. Can you get away from it? Of course you can't. No matter where you run, it's there with you. You know, I mean, you can't lose yourself. You can't lose awareness. It's impossible, right? It's impossible. It's always present. It's who you are. You can't be separate from it. That's why, you know, some people kind of laugh at the whole spiritual seeking thing, although to one degree the spiritual seeking thing makes perfect sense, right? Until you're established in your awareness of yourself, it's good to keep working in that direction. But on the other hand, it's a little bit funny because you're looking for you, you know? And you're right there, not there physically. They're aware, right? So speaking to the person, Nisargadatta says, you are an illusion, right? Speaking to the person that appears, you are an illusion, maya, an imagination. It is only because I know that I'm unreal. So he's talking about the Nisargadatta person, right? It is only because I know that I'm unreal that I know you are also unreal. It is not like this, because I'm real, you are unreal, right? It's not that, he says. It's like this, because I am unreal, everything is unreal. Now here he's talking at the level of form. But it would be grandiosity that would say something like, I'm real, you're unreal, right? I'm real, you're unreal. You know, I can say one of two things, either one is true. I'm real and you're real, and then I'm not looking at the person and looking at, you know, life awareness. I'm real, you're real. In fact, we're the same reality, right? Or I'm looking at the person, which I totally understand is just a passing, it's really a verb rather than a noun, right? A changing verb. And I know what this is, therefore I know what you are, you're a person. And so I can say, I'm unreal, you're unreal. But I can't say I'm real and you're unreal. That's just grandiosity. So again, he says, it is not like this, because I am real, you are unreal. Right? That would be wrong thinking. It is like this, because I am unreal, everything is unreal. Consciousness depends on the body. The body depends on the essence of food. It is the consciousness which is speaking now. If the food essence is not present, the body cannot exist. Without the body, would I be able to talk? And I have heard that Nisargadatta got really big on calling this basically just, you know, this is just a food body. Right? If I didn't eat food, this wouldn't be here. This is just a food body. I'd heard that at the end he got big, and it's funny in the first conversation to see that. But, you know, this is just a food body. It's kind of like a peace pilgrim used to say, this is just mud and clay, you know? What they're both trying to say is it's not what I am. I am not this this meat suit. Yeah, Don says meat suit is another word that people have used. I'm not this. You know, they're kind of trying to separate this from the life essence, right? This is just a thing, a temporary thing. But he is pointing out that the consciousness uses the body, right? He says consciousness depends on the body. Without the body, would I be able to talk? And so consciousness, for people who are still believing that they are a body, that they are a person, consciousness speaks through a body to those people, right? And we've heard this before. The body is a communication device, or the body is a learning device, right? So consciousness uses the body. There's only two short paragraphs. I'm going to see if I can finish this quickly. Can you do anything to retain this sense of I? As it came spontaneously, so it will go. It will not forewarn you by announcing, I am going tomorrow. I love that sentence. So all these people who think, well, I'm not anywhere near being enlightened. Well, how the heck do you know? Because the eye is not going to tell you when it's leaving. Maybe tomorrow, right? How do you know? It will not forewarn you by announcing, I am going tomorrow. And Jesus said it will come like a thief in the night. Remember? Remember? A doubt has arisen and you are trying to find the solution. But who is it that has the doubt? Find out for yourself. Who doubts? And that's the end of the conversation. So thanks for joining with me in that first final conversation. And Don, I will contemplate a title and text it to you in a moment. Good night, everyone.